Welcome, everybody, to the October. I never know what month it is. It's October, right? October 27th meeting of the Expanded Budget Committee for the 2021 Tompkins County Budget. Welcome, and we expect this is our last voting meeting. We will, by the end of this evening, take our all the amendments we've put together on the proposed budget and consider a resolution that we then would send to the legislature on Thursday night, so at a special meeting of the Ledge. So that is a summary of where we are right now. Welcome. And Kevin, you have spreadsheets that we want to put up on the screen. Is that right, to remind people where we're starting today?
Yes, I will commence screen sharing activities here.
All right. Thank you very much. So this is Kevin's famous spreadsheet, and we do have two motions at the moment. Summary of the gray boxes at the top that you see is the summary of where we started with the recommended 2021 budget. That white box, the amended, the changes that we've made over this our past voting meeting, and where we stand right now. So we might as well dive right in. And Deborah, do you want to take the First Amendment across the line there?
Excuse me, Martha?
Yes.
We're going to have to lift that from the table. That's an amendment that was postponed.
Thank you, Kathy. So, Deborah, you want to move to lift that from the table?
Oh, yes. I will happily move to lift that from the table.
Is that right, boss? Is that right, Kathy?
I'm sorry?
Is that right, Kathy?
To lift it from the table, yes.
All right. I second on that. Speak out. I can't see most people.
I will second lifting it from the table.
Second. Was that Leslin lifting? Leslin seconds lifting that from the table. So,
especially with Deborah's lifting motion. I like that hand gesture.
Well, all right. After all, a video conference.
Got to make the most of it. We're going to have puppets later tonight, too, as I understand it.
And dioramas.
Please, we need a diorama. All right. Annie's working on that. So is there discussion? Deborah, do you want to start this one off, explain where we are?
Well, yes, this is the Chief Sustainability Officer, OTR, that Martha and I originally proposed. And after meeting with Jason and Katie, we came up with a new and improved version. Unfortunately, it came up pretty much at the last minute, and some of you expressed some concern about wanting more time to think about it. So on Amanda's motion, it was tabled. So I guess we have to vote first on lifting it from the table, don't we?
I don't think so. Kathy, yes?
Yes.
We're going to lift it. All right. All right, and you'll do the roll call on that, Kathy?
Sure. Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Is Anna Kellis? Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslin McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna will be arriving later this evening. Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sickler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
I'm a yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, now we can have discussion on the motion itself?
Yes.
Thank you, Kathy.
Am I still up?
Well, I see Leslin's hand. Go ahead, Leslin.
So I thank you all for postponing this so that I can read the stuff. So now I saw that the position is, instead of being in planning and sustainability, is now going to be housed in administration. I'm assuming that when it comes on board, that that might be temporary until they figure out where it goes, because I'm not sure that that is where it should be housed permanently. And what they have, if we pass this resolution as is, does it mean it has to stay there, or would our administration and planning director and others have leeway to figure out where is the best place for it to be?
Deborah or Katie, one of you want to?
You know?
Well, I think that actually that would be better addressed by Jason.
But that's what I'm saying. They'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah, I think the idea generally, and, you know, Jason can speak to this himself, I'm sure, was that this position would, as we progress towards our net zero plans for county facilities in the fleet, this position would be offering direction and guidance to all of the departments in the county. Mm. So I think Jason felt that it was better situated in admin. And, of course, it would work closely with the folks in DPS. But, yeah, Jason, why don't you take this one?
I think you're right, Deborah. I think you're right on track. To answer your question, Leslyn, I think just like with any position, if we find after time that it's better suited in another department for a variety of reasons, based on the work, that we can always do that. That's with any position. So
That's fine. Thank you. And I do want to appreciate some of the changes that were incorporated into it. It made much better sense to me reading some of the things that you all put in it. So thank you very much. I will continue to, hopefully when this position comes on board, that it can work with the city, because we are actually rebooting right now to reopen the search for the sustainability director position at the city, because that got shut down with COVID as well. We were close to hire and then we didn't. So hopefully they'll be able to work together, because you're very similar. Well, thank you also very much for the time to be able to look at it and understand better what was happening.
Certainly. Katie, I saw you unmuted. That's a signal.
Oh, I was just going to second what Jason said, that I agree completely. We'll still be working very closely with this position. I don't see a lot of daylight between our two departments working together. And if it looks like it belongs in planning, we would do a, you know, budget transfer to make that happen and bring it to the legislature.
Thanks, Katie. Ann Corman?
Thank you. And I'll third what Jason said and second what Katie said, you know, about not much daylight between administration and planning. And the overall goal is to hook up those departments with geothermal, so there'll be a direct connection. And so I really appreciate the time and energy people have taken to make sure that it's clear to, especially the internal focus part, to help the county further and achieve its energy strategy, and including the net zero emissions for the county fleet and the facilities. So thank you very much, because I know this was a lot of work to put this together, and especially to incorporate all the feedback and the wishes that everybody had.
Yeah, there was a lot of acceptance and welcoming, I think, of adding capacity to the planning department by moving some of the work that they're doing now into this new position, so that they can pay attention to the many policy changes and regulations that are being discussed at the state level and probably soon at the federal level as well. So they now, I think, will have more bandwidth to do that.
Oh, one last thing I forgot to say, you know, just as in Jason's background, you know, has there, you know, someone, you know, doing a heavy lift, you know, I just want to say again that, you know, I realize this is a big lift, so thank you.
All right, any other discussion or questions?
Martha?
Yes, Mike.
I wanted to say that I had the same sort of questions that Leslyn raised about the location of this position. I'm a little worried that we've now put a major position of equity and diversity officer into administration, and now this position in administration. I'm a little worried that we're going to start looking administrative top heavy, which may affect us in the future in labor negotiations and other things. So to me, this ought to be in a plan in the planning department.
Well, is that, since this would be a move of the money into one department or another, is that a motion?
No, I'm not going to make the motion, but I think that's where it ought to be. And I guess I'm not afraid to say that. I think it should be there.
All right. Any other comments on that? Deborah?
Yeah. You know, I went back and forth on this personally, and I know Martha did too. But again, I think that the amendment is in the form it's in based on input from Jason and Katie. And let's just give it a try this way. And if it could be working better another way, I'm sure that both Jason and Katie will let us know. You know, I've been taught since day one on this legislature to defer to staff on a lot of issues. And this just seems like the sort of issue that I definitely ought to be deferring to staff on. And in that connection, I also want to thank both Katie and Jason for meeting with Martha and I and fielding our numerous emails and phone calls and giving us their time and coming up with a solution that met everyone's needs.
Yeah, I think there was more than one meeting, and one of them at 8 in the morning. Thank you.
That sucked.
Thank you for working through this with us. It's sometimes hard for legislators to identify exactly what, you know, where the scratch needs to be itched, where the itch needs to be scratched, and what would solve the problem. So I think this is a good solution. So are we ready to vote? I don't see any of the hands. So, Kathy, go ahead.
Okay. Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn Matheen Claiborne?
Yes.
Glenn Mooring?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, thank you very much. The next one is on here with Anna, but I don't see, is Anna in the meeting?
No.
Okay.
I can also raise it too.
Henry, you want to move this next one?
Yes.
I'll second.
Okay. Moved and seconded to add $5,000 to, it's hard to read this, $5,000 for the community outreach program. I'm sorry? So add to target. We already approved $60,000 in this. This brings that number to 65.
Yes. That was pursuant to Anna's email today. That was the correct amount in the contract. And so things got messed up with it. But because I guess last year it was 60 or whatever, but this year is 65. So that's the logic for why we're increasing it by $5,000 to match the contract. And the city also fixed their budget and also is doing it for $65,000.
Right. Got that. Leslyn?
So let me see if I understood this right. When we first did this position, we put $25,000 into it when we first matched the city. And then last year we added $40,000. Is that correct? Which would have brought the whole thing to $65,000, but we only gave them $60,000. I didn't understand what was going on with it.
There's I can jump in. This is a long line of corrections and contingency changes. If you remember, there was several discussions at the legislative level. You actually increased it to 15,000, then increased it another 20,000 to 60. What you budgeted and what you appropriated for the current fiscal year at the budget time when you adopted your 2020 budget was $60,000. So that was the OTR that we put in the budget for you to discuss. Somewhere along the line, there was a mishap somehow, whether it was a miscommunication or something with Family and Children's, but they came back and said it was 65. I don't know how that came about, but I know what – if you look back actually in the OTR for the 2020 budget, you'll see there's a – Kevin was very descriptive in outlining the actions that were taken because, if you remember, this was a back-and-forth dialogue over 2019. And it was 60,000. I don't know where the 65 came from or how it got missed along the way. But what you adopted in the 2020 budget was 60.
Leslie, is your hand still up? Or did you have something else to add?
Yeah, because now I'm even more confused. So to match what contract then are we talking about? Our contract for $60,000?
This $5,000 increase, Family and Children's, is saying that it should be $65,000. So this is an increase of $5,000 to the $65,000.
But we can't find anywhere in our budget where this $5,000 is missing if our contract was $60,000?
I don't know where the mishap happened. I mean, I know what you budgeted this year, which was 60. Family and Children's is saying it should have been 65 all along. I don't know where the communication mishap happened.
Well, when we voted last year, we added,
well,
20.
Go ahead, Henry.
We also put in contingency last year, didn't we?
Yeah. It was a big back and forth with where it was.
Back and forth on it. And then we funded it once, and then we funded it initially, then we funded it again. And I think that's where the mishap occurred.
Well, I have Anna's email here, which I could read, or we could vote. It's only 5,000, or we could wait till Anna gets to the meeting, but I guess we don't.
I can read you the OTR if you'd like from that was in part of the 2020 budget. So the OTR seeks $40,000 in target funding to provide ongoing funding for the county's increased support in the downtown community program. The resolution 2019-103 adopted on May 21st, 2019, the Tompkins County Legislature increased the support to the CAL program with $25,000 in one-time funding that has been set aside in the contingent fund in 2019 budget to support the expansion of the program to maintain service in face of an expanding caseload. This OTR would add an additional $25,000 to the ongoing target appropriation for this program along with an additional $15,000. This would bring the ongoing target funding level up to a total of $60,000 for the county share in supporting a multi-party funding agreement.
Okay. I'm not sure that helped.
Just all it confirms is that if you remember in 2019, you did a one-time allotment, not a target increase. So the 2020 budget increased it $40,000 from the $20,000 target that it was for a total of $60,000.
Martha?
Just a second, Dan.
Sure.
But you had rollover 25 and you just, HHS just approved 25 out of the contingency fund. So 25, it made me think 25 was the original bill and 40 was the additional.
25 is what they failed to bill us in 2019, which was an increased amount from what you normally had in target. These two are unrelated. The HHS is Family Children's, not billing us in the 2019 fiscal year And since it wasn't encumbered, it has to now, in order for us to pay a back bill, has to be used. You have to reappropriate funding for it.
All right, Dan. Dan, you're going to fix this, right?
I am. I would like, if moving it to contingency would fix it, I will make that motion.
Okay.
Because then we could get the background on what's going on here and vote on it when we have that information.
All right, so that would put it in the budget, but it parks it until we get a clear explanation.
Can't we just vote on it now, and if we need to change it, we can change it at another time, since we have two more votes coming up?
Deborah, you had your hand up?
Well, yeah, I mean, Dan's situation makes solution makes sense. But also, as I read Anna's email, she said that Mike Ellis provided us with the original contract, and it does, in fact, say $65,000. So if that's, in fact, the case, I don't know that it matters very much where the communication fell through the cracks. It's the contract says $65,000.
Right, and I would suggest, to save ourselves time, to save our staff time to track this, if we are intending to match the city's money, that's 65. Is that right, Henry or Leslie?
Yes.
City's putting in 65. If we are agreed to match the city's, I would ask, urge, suggest that we just vote this one up.
I'm sorry, Martha.
Go ahead.
I don't know what the city is putting in. I heard my name. Henry, you know that is what the city is putting in?
Well, I just know from Anna's email.
I second Dan's motion.
Okay. Is that what you're raising your hand again, Dan?
Yes.
All right. It's seconded to put in contingency. Should we spend more time on this? All right. Ready to vote? Wait, this would amend the OTR, and then we would have to vote on that as the main motion.
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Kathy.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Sorry, are we voting to put this $5,000 in contingency or the whole thing?
$5,000.
Okay.
Just the five.
Then yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie Nadine Claiborne?
Yes.
Glenn Warren?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
11 ayes, 1 no.
All right, so the main motion is to approve $5,000 into the contingent fund for the community outreach worker program.
Kathy, I'm here now, too, and I would vote yes for that. This is Dave.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Welcome, Dave. All right. Kathy, you want to go through the votes again?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead and go through the votes again.
Okay. And the main motion as amended? Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Oops, sorry. Yes.
Oh. Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
All right. So we can make the big decisions, can't we, guys? All right. Then I think we're ready to move to Jason's presentation, which actually I would say was stimulated by Dan's search for a way to bring down the tax levy. If I can summarize, Dan, you didn't make the formal motion yet, but you want to just talk a minute about what your intention was and you were looking for another way to do that.
Well, I'm going to make a motion. So if Jason would like to do his presentation first, that's fine with me, or I can make my motion first and then have a presentation. Either way.
All right, why don't you, let's do the presentation first.
Okay.
And so everybody will be on the same page. Thanks, Dan.
All right, so what I put together was partially just as an update. Generally, as we go through the budget process, there's always changes to the budget mid-year, and in this case, more so than ever before because of the can you see that presentation? Mm-hmm. Primarily because of changes with sales tax and so many other things that are going on. This is partially to kind of talk a little bit about just some of those changes since the budget was put together, but also to incorporate some of what Dan had requested and was looking at with respect to using fund balance for decreasing the tax levy. So it includes several things. One thing I thought it'd be good is to kind of go over a brief overview of the budget itself. We eliminated 47 positions, or not funding 47 positions. No layoffs, which I think is a major accomplishment of the budget. We were able to replace or relocate or have a placement strategy, for 18 of those employees. Reduced spending. So in the draft, you'll notice that I sent you earlier today, this is a correction in the draft, and I've also changed up some of the slides just so you folks, just so you know if you're following along on the deck that I sent you. There was an error on my part. It was a much lower number. The spending plan has actually decreased about 11 million or 6% from the 2020 budget. And there are several areas that we've had, obviously the majority of it is influencing about decisions that we've made in the proposed budget. For example, about $2.5 million or so is just due to the decreased salaries and wages, which has to do a direct correlation to the decrease in staffing. There's decreases in contractual expenses, obviously, throughout the whole budget. The Medicaid decrease is over $1 million, almost $1.4 million. There's other changes, other contractual changes. There's pulling out of some equipment and vehicle replacements that we've supplanted with one-time money. There is about a $2.5 million difference, which has nothing to do with us, but we act as a pass-through, and that's TCAT funding. TCAT's aid and some of their expenditures have been their expenditures are expected to decrease by $2.5 million, but that's a pass-through from either from state or federal funds through to TCAT. So those, all in all, it's a pretty decent reduction in the full size of the budget, and there's a lot of other areas that I can definitely get into at some point, but it's an amalgamation of different things that come together for that. So that was a correction over the last slide. Revenue concerns, a big concern, which is partly, which really precipitates the reduction in spending, is the decrease in sales tax. And I'm going to talk more specifically about that because that's changed a little bit from what we proposed. Casino revenue is down, and obviously the potential 20% reduction or so in state aid. The levy as it was proposed was at 4.9%. The rate was only up about a little bit above a percent, and then there was a $5 increase in solid waste fee. That's a little bit of a summary of the budget as it was proposed. So today I had a good conversation with Dave Lucas from the New York Conference of Mayors, and over the weekend, or Friday or so, or over the weekend, the information from the Department of Tax and Finance came out showing the June through August quarter comparison of 2020 compared to 2019. And then we also have in here, on this slide right here, you have the first quarter compared 2020 to 2019. And this is the 20 major sectors that make up our sales tax. So as you can see over here, the cursor is over on quarter two for 2019. In this case, quarter is June, July, and August. And over here is 2020. Here's the dollar change compared to 2019, and here's the percent change for 2019. Over here is the first quarter's percent changes for the first quarter. And notice down here you can see we were about 29% below where we were in 2019 for the first quarter. Obviously, the second quarter has a much better a turnaround in terms of we're only about 6% compared below where we were in 2019. So good growth, I would say, from quarter to quarter, and that would make sense May, April, May was primary shutdown months, where June, July, and August were definitely into the reopening phases. Some key components.
January, February, March, isn't that first quarter?
So try not to get caught up in the quarters because this is the way the state does its sales tax quarter draws. I don't know why it's completely off point. I asked that question and they didn't have a good answer for it. So I'll just do quarter one, quarter two.
Okay.
Sorry. You know, some of the notable differences you can see here, this is electronic shopping, mail orders, this is online purchasing. As you can see, huge increase over the first quarter, or second quarter in 2019. Building materials is up. There wasn't a good explanation as to electronic power transmission and why this is up. He also said there was no reason why it should have been as low as it was before, so there might be a correction in the market for what this is. Then you obviously you can see some of the growth here in different sectors. You know, this is kind of an interesting one right here, your auto dealers. So car sales, a big part of that is just a shy under a percent below what it was in the same quarter in 2019. And what we've seen is what we would probably translate as a pent-up demand that's taken place over the course of the second quarter. We pulled some of the DMV statistics, and you can see a real spike in June and July, which probably has to do with car sales and that pent-up demand that took place from March, April, May. But car auto dealers is usually a big one of our top, either our first or second top sector year after year. So it's good to see that that's rebounded quite a bit. Restaurants and eating places down quite a bit compared to where it was. It was at 39 million in the second quarter in 2019. Restaurants is down to 26 million in sales in 2020. So a huge decrease, still 30% decrease to where it was in the prior year. So as we look through all of this, this to me is kind of a big important factor to look at in terms of comparison to the 2019 quarter. You're just 6% below where you were, 29% below. So kind of, you know, Dave and I, and actually Kevin and Rick joined us for part of the conversation to try to talk about, you know, what does this mean? I would say that this means that your next quarter is going to trend in a similar position, that you may finish the year, the last quarter of the year, at a equal to 2019's sales, possibly, which would be good. That means we're no longer dealing with, it's not as much of a decrease as it was in the prior year. It's just maybe it's equal to what it was in 2019. And if we can get a third quarter that's trending in that direction, that's a good thing. A lot of factors go into that are unpredictable. It's the holidays. Generally, that's a good situation. It could be a bad situation if, you know, if unemployment continues to stay, or unemployment is high and buying power isn't present in the community. It's hard to predict. But what I did here is I took some of these percentages and plugged it into our model that we have, which is very similar to this. We created a model identifying the top 20 sectors and then kind of projected out over a year to compare it to 2019 as we were projecting. Well, every month, when we get sales tax in, we update it. So as you can see here, this left column is the 2019 actuals. This is 2020 year-to-date actual in blue, and the projected ones in orange or brown, whatever color that is. And then the variance from 2019, and then the percentage variance. So when I took the updated information from this slide and made some estimates projecting forward for the rest of the year, September through December, this is the number we come to in terms of estimated 2020 actual. It's still a projection. We still have three more months left to determine, you know, see what's going to happen. But it was improved over our original projections, which would make sense because we're starting to see growth quarter over quarter. So when we updated those numbers, we had a new 2020 actual, which changed a little bit with respect and gives us some flexibility from the 2021 proposed, because that proposed budget was based off of a prior quarter's data. Now we have some current data. A little comparison, 2020 actual, if this were to be the 2020 actual, we'd be about 11% behind 2019 and about 8.7% behind the 2020 budget. Okay. That's around what we budgeted for 2021. I think it's probably safe to say, absent of any further shutdowns, that 2021 will be better than 2020. So from that perspective, I think we have some leeway to reconsider this estimate for sales tax and increase it a little bit. That's what I'm going to recommend to you, about a half a million dollar increase. That's a low increase, but I think 21 will be better than 20. And based on this projection, we're already at the 21 proposed with this number here, 32.6 million.
Okay, if you can hold Jason, Henry has a question.
Jason, in terms of the quarters, does the fourth quarter contain December or not? In terms of the state's information.
On this slide, if I look at this, it wouldn't. The third, the fourth quarter would for them. Because this would be September, October, November, right? But, we've received our September sales tax. We're now waiting for our October numbers that will get the beginning of November. So if I look at just this slide alone, the way they – and I have no explanation as to why they do it this way. I'm sorry. But the next quarter would be September, October, November sales.
Well, Rick has explained that the
right. –
what we consider 1 month is actually the results from the previous month.
That's correct. This is actual sales in those months, this data here. So this is June, July, August. When Rick gives his sales tax numbers, that's actually for sales of the prior month.
Okay, because I'm wondering what the effect of Cornell closing after Thanksgiving would be.
I don't know. I mean, that's one of the points of discussion. So, for example, they're closing, but how many students – some students are not going home. They're not traveling home. They're going to be staying on campus. Some students are going to be staying in the community. How long are they going to stay away if they stay away? Those are – it could be a reversal effect. A lot of folks may not be going home, so they may be staying in the community. So that could change your early December numbers. I don't know the answer to it. I mean, there's a lot of – for every argument one way, you have an argument another way as to what could happen with this. And the same thing could be said for January through February. If they're not going to bring students back to the latter part of January, early February, that's a little delay over in the past. If they're not going home, they're going to be here for those months versus if they do go home.
Okay, thanks.
Remembering that at Cornell, only about 30% of the students live on campus.
Right, but if half of them stay here, that's a decent chunk.
Half of the 70% live off.
And I mean, okay. Half of the 30% stay. I mean, it's a very difficult to determine what that's going to mean.
Okay.
So this was just to show you a little bit of an update with actual numbers compared to proposed, compared to what would happen if you needed to get back to your, pre-COVID numbers, pre-COVID being 2019 actual. This is just obviously this is all just scaling things out. This could happen in any which way, but if things were to recover roughly in 2023-ish time frame, this is somewhat of the type of growth or within reason of the type of growth you would have to see year over year to get back to this number. It's impossible to predict how quickly sales tax will recover. Dave and I and Rick and Kevin, we had a long discussion about GDP, a long discussion about spending habits. There's a lot of different theories. I don't know that any of them is right or wrong, but just to kind of give you a number of the type of growth you'd have to see to get back to pre-COVID numbers or when those pre-COVID numbers would come into play. Some statistics that I can tell you is that the average annual growth over the past 15 years has been about 2.5% per year. Annual growth in sales tax for 4 years following a yearly decrease is about 3.5%. I'll show you a chart about that in a second. And pre-COVID recovery is estimated in 2023. I've heard late 22. I've heard late 23. I think it's still too early to predict. But this is just to kind of give you an understanding of what you'd have to do to get back up to the 36.7 mark where we were last year. Now, that said, we came off three strong, strong years of sales tax growth, 5-6% plus, which is not necessarily common. So this is kind of a chart just to show you sales tax history. There have been really 3 points of decreases in sales tax over the past 15 years or so, 15, 20 years. One was in 2009, which I think is a direct impact of what we would call probably the Great Recession. The other was a 2015 dip, which was followed by a short dip after that, which I don't think we have really any good explanation as to why that happened. And then obviously now this is the projected number of 11.2%. That could go down. You know, it could improve a little bit better to 10%, maybe 9%. But either way, it's going to be most likely pretty significant, much more than this number. You know, when I look at the 4 years immediately following that dip, you have somewhat of an interesting average around the 3 to 3.5 mark, depending on what 4 years you look at. I don't know what that tells you, but it just gives you a little bit of a sounding board that this type of growth post, you know, post 20 is not unreasonable. It's within the average of what we've seen in the prior dips in sales tax. Now, that said, this recession in 2009 is very, very different than what we're experiencing now. For a variety of reasons, the nature of what caused this, which was a banking institutional structural cause, where this is induced by a global pandemic, which is nothing that we can base any decision making off of past history. So while this is interesting in comparison, it may not mean a lot. You may see 10% growth back in sales tax the next 2 years because it's the economy bouncing back for what the void was. You could see structural problems in employment that are going to be lasting beyond this. I don't know, but I think it's important just to be able to understand some of the trends that we've experienced and understand that, you know, this isn't an unrealistic expectation based on prior history in terms of growth in sales tax. So that's kind of just a little bit of background in sales tax. Now I guess I'll shift more to what Legislator Klein had asked around using fund balance to offset the tax levy. So what I did is I created a few scenarios, really two scenarios, and then a third one that may be another way of looking at things to kind of show the impact of what a potential use of $2.8 million in fund balance would be to offset the tax levy. But in order to do that, I thought it would be best to try to capture what might be an actual impact in a future year or two in 21 and 22 based on a consistent set of variables. So in these next two scenarios, I use the same set of variables. I say that there's a taxable assessed growth in taxable assessed value of 2.5% for 2022. I assume that the state budget's going to be adopted next year is going to impose a $1.5 million increase in either unfunded mandates, aid reductions, or revenue reductions. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. I assume an annual growth in the tax levy, about $1 million. Now, on the past 6 years, on average, the legislature has increased the tax levy $1 million for maintenance of effort a year. That's on average. That's what your tax levy increase has been. So I include that in there, assuming 22 would be a similar increase in back to the average use. I also included $350,000 a year because if you remember in my memo, we did pull some equipment out. We pulled some vehicles out, and we also have the COPS program, which is being funded through rollover through 2021. If we were to incorporate those expenditures back into the budget over the course of the next 3 or 4 years, post 21, it would be around $300 to $350 a year that you would add back into target. I assume a 3% increase in growth in sales tax for 2022. And that the median home value goes up $5K to $205,000 for 2022. So those are all variables that I plugged into the next two scenarios. Well, actually, to the 2022 scenarios. I'm sorry. So this is the approved budget amendments. This is you're familiar with the budget amendments you've made so far to date would yield a 5.49% increase in the tax levy, a tax rate of $6.41, and a tax levy of about $54 million, and the impact is about $83 on the household. The mild projection for 2022, which is these variables, would yield about a 1.6% increase in the tax levy, assuming this levy was passed. In a more severe scenario, where you would have more of a $3.5 million cut in state aid or revenue shortfall. Based on state changes. So, for example, right now you have about $5 million of state aid And right now the governor is withholding 20% equals $5 million of state aid. Right now the governor is holding quite a bit of different pockets of state aid, or they're temporarily holding them, which could very well become permanent. And we may not know that for it's well into next year, but if you had a $3.5 million cut in state aid, this might be what type of tax levy increase you'd be looking for in 2022, in a more severe model than this one. If we were to use $2.8 million of fund balance to offset the levy this year, what that does is it postpones really the tax levy increase and pushes future decisions on the future years. But you know, one way or another, either you have to increase revenue or you have to decrease expense. And increasing revenue could be tax levies, it could be sales tax, it could be a variety of things. In this instance, if you used $2.8 million of fund balance to offset the levy, your rate would go down a little bit because your taxable assessed value goes up, but your median home went up, so you'd still pay a little increase in your tax bill. In a mild scenario, which was these scenarios, these variables, you would see about a 7.2% increase in the tax rate. You have to manage that in order to be able to manage the, you're managing the levy from this year and then the increase or some type of compounding levy for 22. And that's with a $1.5 million cut in state aid or other revenues. In this severe scenario, if you had a $3.5 million cut in state aid or revenues, you're looking at closer to a 10% increase for 2022 to kind of show you, this was intended to show you the compounding impact. Now, you could continue to use fund balance to offset the tax levy, but at some point in time, you're either going to run out of fund balance or you're going to have to make a correction. That is either increase another revenue source or decrease in expense to be able to balance that. This question, a lot of discussion around fund balance and unassigned fund balance and what it is. So in this case, I thought I would do a little scaling out of what the unassigned fund balance would look like based on what we know today. Again, these numbers are fluid. They move, but I just wanted to pinpoint some different elements of it. This is your unassigned fund balance as of 2019, the close of 2019. Assuming rollover for this year that we've estimated roughly a rollover and OTR use roughly around this amount, an operating loss of about $4.5 million. This is not updated. What I did is I took the last number we talked about a few months ago, and since we're going to be getting a holiday from a December payment with the consortium, as well as some kickback from TCA for TCAT, that's roughly about $1 million of savings. I bumped it down to $4.5 million. This could be less. We haven't been able to update the numbers yet as to where we think we might be. Obviously, the lower this operating loss is, the better it is in terms of improving this number. This is based off of the 2020 modified revenues. So it would be about 20% your unassigned fund balance would be 20% of your revenues. If we take rollover for 2021 to date, a transfer to the capital program, which is what we've slotted, about $2.75 million, and then also a 2021 levy offset, which is a $2.8 million, this might be your fund balance at the end of 2021. And those are the only variables I plugged in there. Obviously, if we were to have more severe withholdings in state aid, it would probably trigger us to do mid-year cuts again, and that could trigger another operating loss for the year, but that's not what I assume. If we were to have that happen, you're looking at roughly about 17.8% fund balance in that case, based on the 2021 proposed budget so far. And then if you look at the next year, generally you're between – you know, 1.7 to 2 million of OTR rollover use. So if you were to continue that, that's an estimate right here. That would come out for your 2022 numbers. And then this is, again, a planned transfer into capital for 2022 projects. This would be the improvements to the public safety building. And that would bring you down to this number for about 14%, 26 million of your fund balance at the end of 2022. Again, it's a snapshot, a lot of moving parts. So I get a little weary once you go beyond a year outside of this. Things that impact your fund balance, an operating loss in any year will impact your fund balance. Any levy offset, again, any year will impact your fund balance. Something we're not taking into consideration is fund balance growth, or in this case, loss. You know, generally, we usually grow some fund balance. It's possible that we could hopefully – let me say this. It depends on what happens with the state budget, but let's assume it's not a severe incident and we've planned appropriately. You know, you could see some growth at the close of 2021. If that's not the case and we're, and it's a severe impact to the state budget, you might be having another operating loss again in 2021. Therefore, the first time you have growth in fund balance may not be until 22 or 23. Labor settlements, we do have set asides for labor settlements, but that's in restricted fund balance, so that could be pulled out. That would decrease your fund balance. Potential shortfalls in sales tax revenue and unfunded mandates. Again, if none of these come to fruition, let's say, for example, sales tax doesn't come in 2021 because of, I can't explain right now. Nobody can explain what's going to happen. But, if the economy does not recover and you're still under your sales tax, that's going to impact, that could impact fund balance as well as unfunded mandates and state aid. So a little bit of a recap in terms of factors impacting future years. Two major factors, state aid, again, and unfunded mandate changes. So my take on what's going to happen, I would expect some sweeping changes from the governor's executive budget in January. I don't think it's going to be one issue. I think you're going to get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I think he's going to take it from all different areas. That's my personal take on what I think is going to happen. The 20% that's been withheld from us today, I don't have a total number of that, but I can tell you I suspect that it will most likely be permanent retroactive, meaning we're just not going to get it, which means you may not know the impact of it until well into 2021 in terms of its entirety. Sales tax, again, very difficult to forecast and determine. I will say, though, the good conversation today with NYSEC gave me some level of reassurance that we were being able to track it adequately and understand what's going on. How unemployment impacts sales tax. So we dipped below 10%. Actually, we've been below 10% for a month or two now. There's questions as to what does that mean exactly? Are people not necessarily applying for unemployment, but they are unemployed where they were employed before? That's a possibility. We just don't know the longer-term impacts of the unemployment surge, so to speak, over the past several months. Generally, we see delayed impacts in human service needs. So we have seen an increase in safety net SNAP and HEAP applications. I don't expect that to decrease as the unemployment applications continue to come in above average. So point here is that we usually get a delayed response, meaning you don't see it immediately. You see it, 2, 4, 6 months down the road. How will the commercial real estate market respond? So our residential market is very stable. And I talked to Jay a little bit about this. He doesn't know exactly how the commercial market will respond. There's definitely some suggestions that the commercial market may not be impacted at all by this. He said generally, though, you may not know it for a year or two till after the incident. But your residential market, because supply is so constrained, it continues to be stable. Prices and values of homes continue to go up. What about other revenues? Something to think about, like state-authorized casino revenue. I wouldn't put it past the governor to change that legislation in his proposed budget that would eliminate us getting casino revenue. If that were to be the case, we only budgeted $600,000 this year, but it's $600,000. Sales tax diversion, this seems to be a common practice of the governor as of late, both with AIM and now with this distressed hospital fund. I wouldn't put him past it against trying to swipe some more sales tax from us like he's done recently. And other state aid such as CHIPS. So we get a good allotment of CHIPS every year. We lose a few hundred thousand of CHIPS every year. That's, a question of do you want to make that up locally or do you just not want to do that many roads and pavement applications? So those are kind of other factors, I think, that go into the discussion of where do you use the funding and what are you using it for? So based on all of that I just talked about, I do think that we can increase the sales tax projection by about $555,000. I think that that will give you some tax levy relief. I think it's safe to do that based on what we're looking for. It's highly unlikely you're going to have an overly banner year in terms of the remaining three quarters. But even if we were to do fairly well, I think it'll bring you up to a mark where you. If you were to keep the existing proposed number in there, I think we would be a little overly conservative. So I think this gives us some growth room, and I think it's fair and reasonable to do it. One thing that came up as we were looking through this and kind of looking at a proposal of using fund balance to possibly offset some costs would possibly use about $500,000 of fund balance to support the capital plan and supporting two specific initiatives. One being the Green Fleet Initiative and the other being the Green Planning Facilities Planning Initiative. This is another way, essentially, of doing the same thing that Legislator Klein's talking about. It's just on a smaller scale. It's using about $500,000 and supporting the capital plan with it versus just generally supporting general operating expenses. So that combined is roughly a little over $1 million and decreased levy, because both of these would give levy relief in terms of tax levy relief. In this instance, if you were to implement those, it would bring your tax levy increase to just about 3.3%. The rate would drop a little bit, and again, that's because of the good growth in taxable assessed value. And it would give some relief to what was originally proposed and where you're at with the amended budget now. If we had a mild scenario, which is those variables that I talked about a $1.5 million cut in state aid, you may have a little bit of an increase next year, but you'd keep in mind too, with the proposed budget, you have $1 million of contingency available to you. So we've built some capacity to absorb this cut in aid. Obviously, in a severe scenario, you're dealing with a little bit more of a challenge, but you are with all the scenarios that way, because it's a much more severe cut than we're anticipating. So this is a third option to think about and to consider. And then this last slide here, I just kind of put them all together so you could see them all. So you'd have to go back and forth the different slides. You know, at the end of the day, I think this is a much more difficult year. It's a difficult year because sales tax is unknown. We're getting some trending in a good direction, but it's one quarter. Obviously, we'll feel better when we have a second quarter that's going in a positive direction. And we have a lot to make up. I think even if we finish, with a good last 3 months of the year, you're still going to be probably, in the best case scenario, 8 or 9% behind where you were last year. I mean, that's a huge dip in sales tax. It's $3.5-4 million difference. To make that up and then grow, I think will just take some time. And that's a big part of what supports and keeps the levy low has been your growth in sales tax. The other unknown, which I think could have even a more drastic impact, is going to be the unfunded mandate and what the state's going to pass down to us. The governor took a hard swipe at Medicaid reform this past budget year, was unsuccessful, but I have no doubt that it would definitely be in the deck of cards to try it again next year. So while we're seeing scattered withholdings of revenue from the state throughout a lot of different departments, I think that's just a signal of what we think is going to happen. I mean, he's even threatened if there isn't a federal relief package that school aid will be cut. And that's probably, the last thing he's going to want to cut compared to what, if I had to do a balance between schools and counties, I got to tell you, most likely the state's going to pick the schools over the counties any day of the week. So in the absence of any federal relief package, I think we're in for a little bit of a ride, which is why I originally proposed a $1 million contingency as part of a planning effort to absorb some of that impact that we think we'll get. So that's that is the last of the slides. I mean, a bit of good news I can tell you is, the past years, the Department of Taxation and Finance has changed its approach and the way it shares information. If this was 6-7 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to get this information on quarterly numbers, which is great. I mean, it's great to be able to do it. Dave Lucas, did ours just for us today. He hasn't just distributed it yet to the rest of the county. So we took a good hour of his time. He went through it all. He said we're asking all the right questions, talking about all the right things to consider as you're making a decision about the budget. And so the good news there is we're seeing some turnaround, some positive growth. The challenge is, how is it going to be sustained? Is it going to continue to grow? At what rate is it going to grow? So that's all I have.
That's all you got, Jason?
All I got. It's an interesting exercise to go through it. It'd be interesting to see once we get like another three quarters behind us, to see like this time next year, to see how things react to it. But right now, we don't have that luxury. So.
All right. Thank you very much. That's a lot of information, a lot of work on your part, and big thanks to Dave Lucas too. So that's great. We got Deborah and then Henry.
Yes. Thank you, Jason. I just want to be sure I understand. Do all of your scenarios include that extra $1 million in contingent?
Well, when you let me put it this way, if they all include, yes, they all keep it in the budget. I'm sorry. Yes. Answer your question.
Okay. Thank you.
Henry.
Yes. Jason, in terms of the governor's budget, I've heard $16 billion in deficit or whatever. Do we know if he withholds 20% of all state aid, how much money that will be and how much that will close the deficit?
On his end, I don't know how much it will close the deficit. On our end, I think it would be around a $5 million impact to us. I have a feeling it's probably more, but you know, there are certain programs that I don't know how you would gauge. So for example, Code Blue is 100% reimbursed. Is it only going to be 80% reimbursed? I don't know. But our estimates were right around $5.1 million we would lose if there was an across-the-board cut of state aid. At 20%. Yeah, I don't know what it does for the governor.
Okay.
I have a couple questions. Anybody else, though, first? All right. Jason, as far as trying to figure out sales tax, we know that the room tax, tourism and the room tax, is obviously in a different, whole different bucket. Mm-hmm. But tourists pay a lot of sales tax.
Right.
So we've been focusing on, well, if the students are here, the students are not here. But I guess to the extent that is there any way that we do know how to pick apart tourism in this, within the sales tax universe? Because the issue is we might recover to an extent with our local economy, but fear and reality may still keep people from coming from a distance to visit here.
Possible. I mean, look at traveler accommodation. In 2019, traveler accommodation was your ninth best sector. You generated $17 million worth of sales. Right now is the same quarter. Travel is the 11th, but it's an $8.6 million. So you've almost lost, you know, you've lost $9 million, you know, almost 50% of that whole industry. You know, obviously if folks aren't coming here, they're not spending their money here. And that's the big part of it. So also, you know, a big mix of your traveler base is also business. It's also Cornell related. It's also, and then there is, you know, there's tourism as well. You know, what hurt us hard, I think, was just not having graduation. And I can't, you know, I don't know that any higher ed institution is going to be able to tell you if they're going to have in-person graduation yet.
So we might be able to recover, you know, well, as far as the local economy. But still be hurt by the lack of the tourism-related sales tax. I would also point out that it was only a year or so ago when the state imposed a sales tax on Internet sales.
Yep.
And thank goodness they did that before everything went online,
yep,
or else we'd be in even worse shape. All right, so, all right, Deborah.
Yeah, I just want everybody to be aware of a couple of other things that I find somewhat concerning. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal today that said that there's like $7 billion in unpaid rent, nationwide, obviously. But the impact that might have on the real estate market is unpredictable. I've also read that they think that 25,000 stores across the country will close. I've heard astronomically high predictions for how many restaurants, again, all of this is nationwide, but we're not in all that much of an exception. What percentage of our restaurants will not survive and reopen? So when we try to calculate where we're going in our local economy, those are factors that we need to include. Thanks.
Was there a question in there? Okay.
No, it's just stuff that people need to be aware of when we try to calculate where we're going to be in a year or two. You know, the other piece of this is I went to the mall the other day. Holy crap. I mean, half of it is empty. Now, what impact that's going to have on our tax base, I don't know. So, you know, bear that in mind, folks. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I have to say, editorially, I'll just make a point that that's a especially with so much uncertainty. I think that's why our typical strategy of doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that, sort of spreading the risk around to different parts of our budget, spreading the increases or the cuts around to different parts, and not trying to solve all problems with one big move, I think has served us well over the years. Been relatively stable. Anna.
I apologize all for being late. I did want to add an experience that I had recently that reminded me the level of sort of uncertainty that we're in. I was speaking to someone who was a colleague who ran a home health care agency, had experienced a pretty intense experience with Department of Health, that supposedly there's a mandate to clean house. There's too many agencies for the current Department of Health level of staff to oversee, and there is sort of a mandate to review and potentially close out on places that are smaller agencies for efficiency reasons. I don't know the extent of that, but it reminded me that the way in which we are probably going to experience cuts is less like a big knife and more like a million tiny cuts to a lot of programs. And it's very difficult to estimate the extent of that and how much of that is going to start feeling like unfunded mandates that we aren't even aware of or couldn't even predict. And so that is something that left me feeling particularly wary about doing any major blows to our fund balance before we have a sense of what might be coming. And the last thing I'd say about that is it's becoming clearer and clearer that we could probably expect to be in the same situation that we're all in the virtual world, quarantined, I would say, for at least another year. And we can't know the increasing impact that's going to have on all of the sectors, business sectors, nonprofit sectors. So it just leaves such a massive unknown that makes me particularly wary. So the other thing I just wanted to mention, I know you guys already had the discussion about the 5,000 additional community outreach worker and that it's in contingency. But now that I'm here, if anybody had any questions they wanted to ask me, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right, thanks, Anna. Anybody else have comments on all this? I would add one other policy shift that almost happened last year that could happen in the next year, and that might be the legalization of marijuana, which, of course, was seen as a very significant revenue opportunity, should we say. So that could happen. We don't know. And if we're going to be quarantined for another year, we might really need it. Just saying. Rich.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Rich, you raised your hand for that, huh?
I did. Maybe we're ready for legal marijuana. It might help us with trying to divine the future. What Deborah was saying, I've read as well that We may be heading towards some tremendously difficult economic times. And that seems to sort of outline what we're seeing on the ground. At the same time, I'm trying to figure out what inferences to draw from that. Should we be trying to hunker down or should we be trying to act? And certainly one thing we can be certain of is we're going to know a lot more in a year. We're making budget choices now, trying to anticipate what we're going to do in 2022. My general thinking is that I would like to try to limit the impact on our local tax base, the people, the local businesses, the residences, where everybody's hurting, understanding that we may have to do a pretty significant tax increase in 2022. We can debate it back and forth. What is the better pathway in light of what looks like the economic impacts we're starting to see? And I'm not entirely sure. I'd love to hear from other legislators or Jason how you shake out on that. But my view is I think we try to limit tax impact now, understanding that we may have to impose greater impact later. Thanks.
All right, Dan.
Thank you. I have some prepared remarks. I'm going to speak for a few minutes. So go ahead and get your coffee or whatever you need. When I joined the legislature 7 years ago, the county's unassigned fund balance was about $16 million. Today it stands at $46 million. That's about a 300% increase. And at the same time, our total operations increased by about 30%. There are several ways one could explain this rapid rise in the fund balance. And I completely support the idea that this increase in the fund balance was due to careful financial management, long-range planning, and being very stingy when it came to adding employees to the staff roster. My next sentence should not in any way be taken to contradict what I just said, nor as a criticism of the excellent financial oversight provided by county administration, finance department, all of our employees, and by the county legislature. We have been overtaxing our county residents. Again, I don't mean that to be as pointed as it may sound. I mean it as simple math. In the last 20 minutes, people have been preemptively dwelling on our unknown future. Let me tell you some things that we do know. In 2019, we took in $4.8 million more than we spent. In 2018, we took in $2.6 million more than we spent. In 2017, it was $3.8 million. In 2016, it was $5.6 million. In 2015, it was $5.5 million. In 2014, it was $4.4 million. That's why we have so much money in the bank. Can we think of lots of ways to use that money? Sure, of course. But here's one. Let's give some back. Let's give back enough so that we can operate in 2021 without raising the tax levy this year. How much would that cost? $2.8 million. It goes without saying that uncertainty is the name of the game right now. But 1 year from now, we are going to know a lot more. We are going to know whether or not we have a vaccine and how well it works. We are going to know who the next president of the United States is. We are going to know more information about the status of our local student population, our sales tax revenue trend, our tourism numbers, our state aid levels, whether or not we received federal stimulus money, the trend in our casino revenue, and possibly a better forecast about the status of work from home versus in-person work. There should be a lot more certainty 1 year from today when we are working on our 2022 budget. $2.8 million buys us 1 year. If 1 year from now our revenues are still falling sharply and we cannot see an end in sight, then we will have to make more difficult choices concerning raising taxes. But today, right now, in planning for the 2021 fiscal year, we can postpone some of those hard choices. We have the luxury of a big bank account, and we can use a small piece of that bank account to attempt to stabilize for 1 year. If we used $2.8 million from our fund balance to provide for a 0% increase in the tax levy, how much would we have left? I had written $32 million, but based on the update Jason sent out 2 hours before the meeting, it's actually even more than that now. I think it's $34 million in that analysis. It will take less than 10% of our bank account to stabilize for 1 year and deliver a 0% tax levy increase. I will address the concern about this idea that I've heard from my colleagues, and I heard quite a bit of it tonight. One, the concern is that some of that $2.8 million covers ongoing expenses, what we call target funding in our budget. This is true. We cannot take money from the fund balance to pay for ongoing expenses indefinitely. Just as a homeowner could use their savings account to pay for their mortgage for some number of months, but not forever. However, I am not in any way suggesting that we continue to draw down the fund balance to pay for target funding. I am suggesting that we do a little of it this year and then reevaluate next year. Taking out less than 10% of your bank account one time to pay for current expenses is not a dangerous or an unsound financial decision. The reason to have a healthy fund balance is so that you can spend it in an emergency. We are in an emergency. Some people refer to the fund balance as the rainy day fund. Guess what? It's pouring outside. This legislature has formally voted to request financial help from the federal government in recent months. We did this based on the idea that we are all in this together, that the federal government had resources we don't have, and that we are in need here locally. Well, our taxpayers can make the same argument to us. The county has the resources, and the taxpayers are in need right now. So let's deliver some good news to our residents. I think they could use it. Let's deliver a 0% increase in the tax levy. It's actually an easy decision to make. Dutchess County is doing it. Broome County is doing it. Leslie Danks-Burks has made high property taxes her top issue, according to the Ithaca Journal. A 0% increase is responsive to our residents who would rightfully ask, how can we justify an increase in the tax levy at the same time that our bank account has tripled in the last 7 years? A 0% increase is financially sound. It leaves us with more than $32 million still in the fund balance. It acts as a small economic stimulus, putting some dollars back into the pockets of our local residents. It keeps us under the tax cap. This is a win-win solution, and I hope you will join me in supporting it. And so I'm moving an amendment to the budget to take $2,817,712 from the fund balance and apply it against the tax levy. Thanks.
I'll second that motion.
Well, I saw Shauna and Amanda. Shauna, did you have your hand up first? Did you want to second that? You're muted.
She did just second it. Sorry about that. I mean, Amanda can second, and I'm also very excited to support that, Dan. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Shauna, Amanda, did you want to say anything else?
Yeah, but did you, Shauna? You had your hand up. No.
I just wanted to say, every year Dan comes out of budget, and he's one of our last speakers, and he kind of takes everything in and then comes up with a great idea to make us look like heroes at the very end. And this is another, I think, a really good idea. And I think that from what I've heard from my constituents, people are out of jobs, they're furloughed, they're behind in rent. And I do think we have a lot of money in our fund balance. And for $2.8 million, for people not to have to pay more than they've paid in previous years, this is really a no-brainer for me, for us to be able to provide the same services, for us as a county to make cuts and to be conservative with our finances. It really just makes sense. So I hope others will join, and I hope we can give back to our community right now. Thank you.
Amanda, then to you, and then Deborah.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate Dan thinking this through and bringing this forward. I think, I'm not an accountant, I'm not a finance person, but
for me personally, in an emergency situation, I would take my savings account and deal with the things that I needed to deal with in a, you know, right now. And as Dan said, you know, we can't do that indefinitely. That's just not how it works. But right now we have this opportunity, and I think about, you know, all the other things that we spend so much money on, the airport, you know, we, like, the airport can take a break right now. Let's give the money back to the people who need it. I loved what Jason said about putting that money back in, some of that money back into the green capital plan and the green fleet. So, you know, so we're moving forward on our plans for that. That's obviously a priority for me. So I feel like I will support this. I think it's a step in the right direction for this year, and then we'll see what happens next year.
Thank you. Deborah.
Yeah, I've been against this idea from the very beginning because I just don't know how long that fund balance is going to have to last. On the other hand, Dan makes a very convincing case. And if this is a one-off, I might well be willing to support it. I'd like to be sure I know what the exact amount is now that we've added all our OTRs and stuff. I don't imagine it will vary too terribly much from Dan's estimate or his motion.
That should be the correct number, Deborah.
Oh, thank you, Dan. I think, though, that for me to support this, we would have to make it very clear to our constituents and residents and taxpayers that this is a one-off and that depending on how the situation develops going forward, they might well be hit with an uncomfortable tax rate increase next year.
So just to go to that point, if we look at Jason's last sheet, the comparison sheet, budget amendments across the top, that's what we have now. Use $2.8 million in fund balance. So the that middle column says 2021 amended, says zero at the bottom. So if all other things, if I get this right, Jason, all other things stay the same in 2022, a year from now, maintenance of effort would be 7.21% levy increase. Is that the way to understand that?
Yes.
So a year from now, as not to put to find a point on it, but as legislators are facing election, in order to keep doing what we're doing, we'd have to raise taxes 7% or more, 7 plus, or if things are worse than expected, could be 10%. So the alternative at that point would be really cutting many, many, many staff people, true layoffs, to bring that number down, or and or taking even more out of our fund balance to bring the rate from 10 or 7 down to something in the normal range. So just so people understand, that's what we're talking about here. And I would suggest also that maybe we take seriously Jason's couple of suggestions before we even look at what might be needed to get to zero. So I'm not, you know, we have to talk about Dan's first because what I'm suggesting is different. But if we did what Jason is suggesting, we would get to what you've got on the bottom line there, 3.3%. Is that right, Jason?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so how do we get to that? How is that different from Dan's suggesting?
In other words, that seems radically different. You couldn't make an amendment to Dan's amendment. You're really doing something completely different, I think is the way, right?
Yes. There's some different moving parts of it.
Okay. So if what we'd like to consider first is Dan's, then we consider it. But I hope we remember that we also have been handed the option on the bottom of that sheet. So, all right. So, Deborah, you spoke. Did you have anything else, or you didn't lower your hand yet?
Yeah, I would like, before we vote on Dan's, to know how Jason's suggestion, which seems to be a compromise, is different. But I'm certainly happy to let everyone else speak first.
Can Jason just summarize his first so we know the direct comparison to comparison?
Sure. So the difference, essentially the difference between the two is about $1.7 million. That's the difference. What I propose is we increase sales tax revenue about $500,000, which is going to decrease your levy by $500,000. And what I'm suggesting is you use about $500,000 of fund balance opposed to 2.8 to support the capital plan, which will bring your levy down another $500,000. So your levy is going to come down about a million and a million one. And that'll get you to a 3.3% increase, which is, a little bit more than if you were to take the whole $2.8 million levy decrease. The difference dollar-wise is about $40 difference between the two proposals, you know, on a median home of $200,000.
And when you take...
But if I'll just add, the primary differences between these two approaches are what it does in the subsequent years and the ground you may have to make up in the subsequent years. My approach to budgeting is generally finding the moving all the little levers a little bit rather than moving one lever a lot. Generally, we try to find the approach that's going to provide a minimal amount of risk moving forward without putting all your eggs in one basket. So in this case, this is increasing the levy. The levy provides you with base substance where in the other proposal, you're not increasing the levy at all. So you have a much larger jump if things were to say, take the severe model. This kind of finds a little bit of everything. It's a middle of the road approach that spreads. I would say if there's pain to be had, it spreads it over several years versus having none now, but having a lot later. And I think from a budgeting perspective, it's a more responsible approach from being able to manage those risks over multiple years than trying to push the risks off to a shorter time frame to deal with them. So that's the primary difference. Is the fund balance is an issue, but I think the bigger issue is what this does for a future year or two and where it sets you up to be able to deal with issues in a year or two. So the ability to try to find a manageable balance to that, that's what that third scenario does.
So if I can just further try to encapsulate. So if we increase the sales tax estimate by $550,000, that's a little more than 1% on the levy right there. And that's not based on wishful thinking. I mean, all of it is unsure, but that's based on as much solid analysis as we can figure out. So that's a responsible estimate. That it sort of isn't risky, isn't any riskier than everything we're doing. It isn't that risky to raise that level. And that is ongoing money, right?
It's logical to assume that if this last quarter saw good growth over the prior quarter, there doesn't seem to be any imminent shutdown in your economy right now. It's going to suggest that your next quarter is going to see some progression in growth again. It's likely that if that is the track into 2021, your 2021 sales tax will be better than your 2020. It may not be quite, I doubt it'll be, it won't be most likely like your 2019, but it'll be better. And if it's better, this, I think, is a calculated increase that's fair and reasonable and that's supported to increase that projection by that amount.
Okay. And one more thing, and I promise to get to the hands that are up, but so we understand the choices here. Then the other part of your proposal, Jason, was to take, remind me how much to apply to the capital program?
About $550,000.
Okay, take $550,000. when you take fund balance to apply to a one-time expense, like capital, then that's apples to apples.
Yeah.
That's instead of taking one-time money to put it onto a salary. So, okay, Henry, Anne, and Rich.
Yes, I'd like to ask Rick a question about bond counsel.
Hi, Rick. There? Welcome.
Bond counsel, yes.
I mean, how much, I know the plan was to spend down the fund balance to another level of capital funding, of capital expense. What will, in the scenarios that Jason's proposed or that Dan's proposed, what will be the effect on our bond rating, if any?
Well, I had other legislators asked me this question offline, and we did ask the financial advisor to respond. And in this market that we're in right now, it's if you lost one credit rating or even two credit ratings, it would be like 20 basis points that you would lose because the yields are so low right now. And so it's almost negligible. I know I spoke to Dan about that. Dan, do you remember what I wrote you?
Yes, the number that the bond council suggested as a ballpark figure was 0.02, which I figured out on our recent airport bonds, which were $13 million, would be $2,600.
Yeah. So I think a lot of it has to do with where we are in the market at a particular date and time. If yields were around 6 or 8%, you might be looking at a sizable change. But when yields are like 2 to 3% for a long-term bond and about 1% for a one-year band, it's so negligible that, you know, even one or even two reductions in credit rating wouldn't amount to that big of a difference. But the fund balance as part of the overall method of Moody's or Standard & Poor's or any one of those evaluating our credit, that's just one factor you have to remember over about 24 different moving pieces in your economy. So even though that might look bad to have your credit rating reduced, I don't think we're in danger of a loss of a credit rating of that magnitude just because of that one thing, our planned use of reserves going down. It would have to be a whole lot of other ratios and a lot of other factors that make up our bond rating before they would reduce our credit rating.
Okay. Thank you. Can I ask a question of Jason? In terms of your plan versus Dan's plan, is there a middle ground where if we put the tax levy at 2.75%, that we could basically release the levy for some people, for many people, but again, also balance it out or not have as much of an impact on the tax for next year or the year after that?
So back of the napkin, if you wanted to drop it another 0.5%, you're probably looking at another $250,000. So you'd have to use, you know, probably throw in another $250,000 of fund balance use to bring that down to 2.75%, back of the napkin.
But I assume that would also lessen the impact on the swings for the property tax for next year and the year after that too.
What would happen is it would push a greater burden on the 22 numbers because you would be, you know, you're supporting the levy with you're supporting expenses not with levy money but with fund balance. So unless you were to repeat that into the next year, which you may not, then you're going to have to increase the levy by that much more to make up the difference. So while you may show a decrease in the 21 numbers, you'll see an increase in the 22 numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's sort of either pay now or pay later, right, Jason, that's the bottom line.
At the end of the day, I mean, one thing with that, in order to decrease the tax levy, you have to either increase other revenues or decrease expenses.
Yeah, just remember, there's a lot of ifs in there, you know. if every prediction came true that was made tonight, then yes, you would have to raise it, the taxes, as you pointed out. But there were at least seven ifs in that slideshow, so.
Right. The only reason I did that was to give you some reasonable variables to understand what it could be. Now, so more typical looking at your average levy growth from year to year to year, it would make sense to take that as a reasonable variable.
Yeah, we always have to rely on our administration to do the best job they can to estimate.
My point is you can't say with confidence that this my plan would result in a 7% tax increase next year. That is not an accurate statement. I just want to make that clear. That is based on a whole bunch of assumptions.
Anna, then Rich, then Leslin.
A lot of us are based, that we're all basing all of our estimates on assumptions. So, I mean, if we could just be honest about that from the get-go, I think this conversation is about which combination of ifs do we all feel comfortable with. And I think from this conversation, we're just noting that we're all different, we're all comfortable with a different set of ifs and assumptions. And there's nothing wrong. I have not heard a single person wrong in anything they've said. It's just where we all fall out. The one thing, though, that I am seeing, and I want to throw this out there, Dan, I appreciated one of the things you had said earlier was, I really want to make the conversation about fund balance like the last thing that we're talking about. And I respect that because I'm trying to wrap my brain around it. And with other variables on the table, it makes it more complicated for my brain to sort of wrap around. And there are two other variables that have been brought forward. One is a realistic adjustment of sales tax. And the other is the adjustment to the capital fund. And those seem to be separate issues, and that the discussion about how much, if maybe all comes out of reserve after that is still on the table. So it seems to me that both part of Jason's and Dan's can be discussed. So I wanted to just check in with everybody because I would personally really like to explore the sales tax adjustment as a vote and then explore an adjustment to the capital fund and then explore whatever is remaining as a discussion about the reserve fund. We're in the middle of something being on the table, so I'm not sure logistically how that would happen unless it was temporarily removed, if Dan wanted to maybe discuss the other two first and see what's remaining to discuss in fund balance. Is that amenable, Dan?
Can I make a comment on what you're saying, the two brief comment?
Sure.
Okay, so the idea of reducing, Jason, correct me if I'm misinterpreting what you said, the idea of taking $500,000 out of the capital program is the same as taking it out of fund balance, correct?
Yes. I mean, essentially it's the same thing you're proposing, Dan. It's just less money.
Okay, very good. So that I hope that addresses part of what you were asking, Anna. The idea of taking it out of capital is the same as taking it out of fund balance. I would say this about the adjusting the sales tax revenue. If you adjust the sales tax revenue $500,000 off, as Jason's proposing, and you don't meet it next year, if it comes, sales tax doesn't meet that projection, then you just take that money out of the fund balance to make up the difference next year.
I'm aware of that. What I'm asking is, we're all going to have an opinion about sales tax and where we feel comfortable, and it seems like a separate conversation of whether or not we want the remainder to come fully, partially, or not at all out of fund balance. And with respect to the capital, Jason, is there there's the unreserved fund balance and then there's the allocated fund balance. Is the capital reserve designated as an allocated, or is it really just sort of an emotional mark on the unreserved fund balance?
So this would be the same use that Dan is proposing. It would be unassigned fund balance. That's
okay.
What we're using.
Okay, so then this would just be a conversation about the $550,000. And these are all predictions. And, whether it comes out of fund balance or not is also mixed with a million ifs. of what we're going to experience next year, what we're going to experience the year after that, whether or not we're going to if we do it only once, whether or not we're going to have to then do a larger amount next year in order to meet this, because we know that maintenance of effort always increases every year. There's a million ifs, Dan, with your option. There's a million ifs with the sales tax. And they are two separate issues. And I feel that they should be discussed separately because everybody's going to have their own opinion about each one of them. If you want to do, if this group wants to do a discussion about fund balance at the, as the last thing, I would like to propose that we take the discussion of sales tax and where people feel and how comfortable people feel on adjusting that before we discuss what the balance is that we are then discussing to have out of unassigned fund balance or not.
I could just say we could do it the opposite way. We could vote on this, and it passes or it fails. Either way, you can then, someone can make a motion to adjust the sales tax revenue. They're not mutually exclusive.
Or adjust the sales tax revenue to reduce the amount that was being pulled out of reserve.
That's right.
Okay, here's the thing. We have two different numbers. Jason is proposing that 550 come from fund balance and go specifically to capital. The Dan is proposing 2.8. So I think it would be a legitimate motion, amendment to the amendment. So instead of the amendment to the budget being 2.8 for fund balance.
Hold on, Martha.
Jason, yeah?
I just want to make one thing. Increasing the proposed sales tax number by 555,000 would essentially decrease Dan's proposal to about 2.3 million.
That's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah.
That's what that would do. That's the only difference in all of this. The 500 for capital is essentially the same thing that Stan's talking about net at the end of the day. So if you were to make a change, I would suggest you consider the sales tax amendment first, and then that would ultimately change the amount that you would need to appropriate from fund balance from Dan.
That's what I'm suggesting.
That's the net difference in all of this.
And I'm just mentioning we could do them in the opposite order with no harm done at all.
I think it would be a little easier if we could just figure out what's the final balance that we're dealing with.
Can we hear what all the other legislators have to say before people start making?
Hey, Amanda, everybody will be done when they're done, and that's the purpose of having a democracy here.
I'm chairing the meeting. I was trying to understand a way to get to an amendment to the amendment. So I've got a bunch of hands. Anna, do you want to wait a second? I'll come back to you. Or do you want to make an amendment to the amendment?
Martha, am I in the queue?
You know, Mike, I'll put you in after Leslie. We've got to do something different. I can't see you. Is there Kathy?
I spoke up once before.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you maybe did. But, Kathy, is there a way for you to put up the hand for Dan, a blue hand for Dan or Mike?
No, we can't as a host.
All right. Sorry, Mike. Let me take Rich Lezen and then Mike Lane, then Mike Sigler, and I got Jason again, then Annie. So go ahead, Rich.
It seems like whether we raise our estimate for sales tax or not, that's an accounting measure, and we can do that. It seems I think I agree with Dan. We should really address the fundamental question of his resolution, and then we can adjust that number up or down to get there if we vote for it. And that's what I'd like to speak to is that, you know, I've heard several comments. I think we need to be very clear, as somebody said, that we tell our constituents and taxpayers, we don't know what we have to do in 2022, but it might be a significant tax increase. What we're trying to do now is to deal with the certainty we have before us, which we know that there's real economic anxiety, and this is in effect a local stimulus, as I see it. I'm perfectly willing to go into an election year at the same time as we're looking at a significant tax increase, and we got to be comfortable with that. But I think it's the right thing to do. I do not think it's the right thing right now to put a significant tax increase on the taxpayers. So I'm going to support this. Thanks.
Okay, Leslin, then Mike Lane.
Well, I don't know where we are anymore, because I thought there was going to be an amendment on the sales tax piece of it. You know, Dan, I appreciate, and you always, you know, bring good thinking behind this resolution. And often we end up passing something to reduce the levy, which sits well with me as someone who pays out of my nose. But I don't know that I am willing to take that chance entirely and then say to people next year, here's a much bigger amount. For everything we've been hearing, 2021 is going to be even harder on folks than 2020. In everything that we've been hearing, looking at I think there was a thing that came up from IC today about their students for the spring. So we know that there's going to be more bodies, and we anticipate that our sales tax will probably go up a little bit more. So I'm willing to make that adjustment to the sales tax, and I'm not willing to do the entire amount that Dan's asking for. Even a small amount of levy increase for me is better than coming to folks next year and saying, here's 8%, here's 10%. Some of us might be willing, but I guarantee that come next year, if those are the numbers we're looking at, most of us sitting around this table aren't going to support that. Let's just be honest about it.
Thank you. Thanks, Leslin. Mike Lane.
Leslin, the points you just made are very good. Rich, I simply can't agree with your idea here that we do nothing this year and say to people, well, maybe it'll be a huge increase next year, but let's just wait and see. I can't agree with that kind of not good planning, in my view. I think we should do something this year. I'm pleased if we can keep this under 5%, knowing that our tax cap is under 1%. I think Jason has come back to us with some ideas. Normally, administrators and our budget people don't say to us adjust the sales tax figures, but we're hearing that all of a sudden, and it's perking my ears up. We have to make hard choices this year, and I think to try to say to our homeowners that there'll be no county tax rate increase, and that next time there'll be a huge one. I can't say that to my constituents. Maybe you can. And Deborah, I just don't think that we can possibly say that it's going to be a one-time thing if we do this. It's going to come back again next year. And who knows what we're going to have to pay out of fund balance this year. What's going to happen with TC3? I don't know. What's going to happen with some of the other things that we support and have to help them? I think Leslin is right. Next year is going to be tough. We're seeing COVID cases go up. It's scaring people. It'll scare people not to come up here. It'll scare people to come here. I can't predict exactly what it's going to be, but I think we ought to do something this year. I think we've been offered by our budget, our chief budget officer, which is our county administrator, a possibility of reducing this to 3.3%, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Pardon me if I say something about legislative history here, but I can remember budget season after budget season where we'd hear one member of the legislature who would always put forth amendments to increase the sales or the tax levy because just thought we ought to spend more money on more social programs. And at the same time, we had another member of the legislature, and they were both right around the city, who would recommend that we cut things the way Dan does each year. I don't think I need to name them, but they're both very honored members of the legislature, both had good ideas, but we always ended up somewhere in the middle, and usually at the recommendation of our county administrator. Thank you.
Mike, I thought you were going to say there was a legislator who would vote for every single line item and then vote against the budget because it was too high. I think you're
That's a different one. That's another legislator.
Right. All right. Mike Sigler, then Annie. Anna, do you have your hand up again or? No, yes.
I wanted to offer an amendment.
Okay. Mike Sigler, Annie, then I would like to go before there's another amendment.
I would too, because I have birthday dinner waiting, and I'm putting all my birthday money towards this effort. So that should save us some money. Listen, I talked to Jason last night about where I was on this, and frankly, I was pretty comfortable with the proposal as it was way back in when we started doing this budgeting. I told people, a lot of people, I said, listen, this is going to be a year where you're probably going to need to take a great deal of money out of the fund balance. You're going to have to probably raise taxes, and you're probably also going to have to cut some people. We definitely did all that. But I will say that a lot of times we sit here and we talk, and I sometimes wonder why people are kind of staying on something, and I'm like, all right, we'll listen to it. But Dan, I thought, presented such a cogent case. I'm like, that was effective. And so I have to say it, that has really shifted me over to his side. I mean, not his side. I think it's a very valid point. I don't have, any problem going to the taxpayers and saying, listen, it's been a tough year. We're going to do this because this is money that you've paid. This is your money. We're just holding it, really. And we're going to use that so that we can keep taxes in check. But be prepared. We've got to turn this boat around. And if we don't, next year is going to be even more difficult. And I think that's okay to tell people. I don't have a problem telling people. And I think we should tell people that. I've never really gotten in trouble when I tell the truth to taxpayers about where we are. People are pretty understanding about that. So I think that this proposal for Dan is very fair, and I like the idea of adjusting the sales tax. I'd rather be hopeful with the idea that, hey, that may not pan out. And as you know, I never liked the gambling money because I think it's freaking ridiculous that we do that, but whatever. That's what the governor has decided to do. We're literally shifting money from one person to another. We're not creating anything. We can go on, but anyway. So thank you, Dan, for bringing this forward. I think it's pretty good, and I think Jason O has done a great job to kind of get us to this point. I really feel that both options are fair, but I just like Dan's idea. So that's where I am.
Annie.
Thank you. I want to say happy birthday to my colleague, Mike Sigler, who shares a birthday with, is today your birthday? Yeah, okay. Who shares a birthday with Sylvia Plath, John Gotti, and Theodore Roosevelt.
My wife has already turned off the oven. We have closed it. We're not going that direction.
So I was when we started the budget process, I was for trying to take as much money as I felt and other people felt comfortable from the fund balance because, as Dan said, this is a rainy day, and I saw the money building up and I thought, okay, I thought something similar. Are we overtaxing people? Are we taking too much money? And then I thought, well, if something bad happens, if something really bad, we are prepared because bad things have happened before. Now, but then I look at that we are taking, I believe, over $10 million from that fund balance to help us this year and next year. So.
More.
Pardon me?
4.5, I think, is the current estimate, right, Jason?
For both years?
2020.
Well, you have to take into consideration some of the OTR rollover that would be used this year, and then for next year, it would be OTR rollover and transfer of capital. So if you want to talk about total impact to fund balance, you have to add up those five categories over 20 and 21. So I think you're using more than the 2.8 for fund balance.
I mean, we're big picture. We're going from 46.5 at the end of 2019 to 32 or so, 34 or 32. So between closing the gap in this year and the gap next year, we're already projecting to take, is it's either 12 or 14 million out of the fund balance.
Right. So what I'm looking at is we're already taking a big chunk for this year and next year, and the proposal that Dan has is about for next year. So I think for me, I have to look at this year and next year combined. And so if we had to take less out, if we had to take, you know, like 6 or 7 million out for this year or next year, I would be more amenable to it. But because it's around 12 million, I don't feel as comfortable. I would right now, I think I could stomach if your proposal was $500,000 to $1 million versus 2.8. That's just too much for me. So if it was that much, I would vote no for it right now. So thank you.
All right, Anna, before you go, thanks, Anna. That's a good lead in for where I was thinking, which is I really think if we look at it this way, 2.8 is Dan's number. And Jason, really, if you could help me, I'm looking for the number. The unallocated fund balance was 46.5, and at the end of your proposed budget, it was 34 or 32?
39 at the end of 2020.
Right, but the end of 2021.
32.
So in this 2-year period, we'd be taking 14 million already out of the bank, so to speak. So this would be taking 2.8 more. So I think it's a responsible and no-brainer thing to reduce that by 550 out of the sales tax, and then another 550 that goes directly to capital. That leaves you with 1.7 that we still haven't dealt with.
I thought the 550 is the same thing, so it really just brings it down to 2.3.
No, there are two 550s.
I understand, but one of them is also fund balance. So it doesn't matter. They're both fund balance. Just as Jason said earlier, if you take the 550, it's 2.3. The other 550, you would just be shifting it from one bucket in unassigned fund balance to the other bucket in unassigned fund balance. The other 550 is already in unassigned fund
balance. Right, but the point is we wouldn't have to raise that in taxes. Right now, that's part of the tax levy. I think the way Jason got to 3.3% levy increase is that by taking those two actions, you still have a gap of 1.7 million. Is that right, Jason? That's a levy of 3.3.
Yeah, your 3.3% levy is a $1.7 million increase in the levy.
Right. So it means that we're using sales tax and fund balance to deal with these two issues. I think I really, really do think that people will understand a 3.3% levy increase this year and a more modest increase next year. I think next year, when we're talking about 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, or I don't know, or maybe 5% plus 50 layoffs, people won't remember that they didn't get they didn't have to increase their taxes this year. I really don't think they will remember that. I think it'll be washed out in you know, the flux of many, many things. I think that this is a more balanced approach. I really think it's, we've already taken 14 million out of the bank. And I think we're putting ourselves further at risk if we take any more. So Anna, you're next, and then Deborah.
I think that there's an amendment on the table. And I would like to make, and I think this needs to be piecemeal. So I'd like to start by the initial amendment to it, which would be to decrease Dan's proposed amount from the reserve fund by 550, commensurate with an increase in sales tax.
All right.
It would bring it down to 2 point.
Can I ask a point of order question?
Let her finish saying what.
So it would bring it down to 2.3, just under 2.3, and it would simultaneously increase sales tax by 550 as the first amendment, just so that we can get that off the table and that we're talking about one amount. And the reason I'm doing that is because some of us are more comfortable doing a partial, and we can't really discuss a partial unless we know the total that we're discussing a partial from. So if we could just make this easier, everybody feels one way or another about this change to sales tax, we can just vote on it. So I'm suggesting an amendment, which is a $550,000 reduction in what Dan is proposing, commensurate with a 550 increase in sales tax estimate.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right, Deborah seconds. Annie, what's your question?
Well, so if we do an amendment to this, we can only do one amendment. Is that correct? And that would be the only one we're able to do.
Well, no, I mean, doesn't it that it, I mean, we need to, once it's voted on, we're back to the original amendment, and then another amendment can happen if we want.
But once we deal with this adjustment to that first number, then we're back to one amendment to the budget. There can be another amendment. But right. First, we have to deal with this one. Deborah, did you have any?
I'll consider that a friendly amendment.
Okay, that's friendly?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. All right, Deborah, and who seconded? Amanda, you seconded or Shauna? Is that friendly?
I think I did. Sure, the sales tax part.
Okay. All right, Deborah, did you want to?
Yeah, but this is not directed to the amendment. This is directed to the original. So if you want to wait till after we vote on the amendment, I can wait.
It was friendly to both, so we're now at a 2.3 or under 2.
Okay. So I guess I will speak. Unless Jason has something.
Just want to get Kevin to give us the right amount. He said you want to increase sales tax by $550,000, decrease the 2.812 number. Kev, can you tell us what that would be net?
My math was 2.2 million, 2.267,712.
Yeah, the sales tax was 555, wasn't it?
In fact, yes, it was 555 actually. $5,000 is going to make a difference right now. Okay.
Just to pay the cow.
So the amount that Dan's would become should be this number up here.
Adjusted by another 5,000 because it's not 550, it's 555. I'm sorry.
555.
Correct. That's the exact amount.
Can do that.
So 2.262712.
Shall I go ahead and change Dan so you can see the way it all plays out?
Yeah.
Okay, consider it friendly.
And I do this so that we can now work with this number as a group.
Yeah, let me know when I can talk.
Okay, just as soon as we get this organized. Boy, it is hard to see this. I need a bigger monitor.
There you go.
All right. Okay, we all set then?
Take your screen off, Sharon, Kev.
Thank you, Kevin. Deborah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the difference that it makes between not raising the tax rate at all and incorporating Jason's compromise. And it's $56.44 for an average house, which I guess is valued at $200,000. And I'm thinking about the fact that we know that this pandemic has had economic impacts that are disproportionately falling on our poorest and most marginalized citizens. So, I mean, how many of our poorest and most marginalized citizens are living in a $200,000 house? And if the benefit of this is going to go largely to people who don't really need it, and the difference is only going to be $56 this year, meanwhile, the difference to us as a county is $2 million or more as we move forward into a really unpredictable and problematic fiscal future, I just don't see that the trade-off's necessarily worth it. And I would be vastly more inclined to go with Jason's proposal, which is more measured and leaves us some wiggle room. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't mind saying to my taxpayers, well, you know, next year I might have to raise your taxes 10%. But if next year is bad again, that's really not going to help them very much. That just means they're going to be getting hit twice as hard in the following year. So I guess for that reason, as good as your argument is, Dan, I'm more inclined to pursue a more measured and responsible, fiscally responsible course of action. So I guess I won't be voting for Dan's proposal. I would vote for Jason's.
There are a few people who haven't spoken, but there are also no hands up. Does anybody else want to speak?
Martha, what's the motion on the table at this point?
The motion on the table is to take 2.262712 from fund balance and apply it to lower the tax levy to zero.
Since the prior amendment was friendly, I think we should be able to have another amendment. Is that true?
Correct.
I'd like to make an amendment.
Okay.
I move that we amend to the county administrator's proposal to bring the tax levy down to 3.3%.
All right, then if I can interpret that, I think what you're saying is that a way to put this in terms of what to take from the fund balance would be $550,000. Or 555, Jason, or 550?
550.
550. Instead of 2.2 million that you would take, you would change the number to 550,000. Correct, Jason? And then that would go to the green capital plan.
Yeah. Well, it would. Yes, it would you'd be decreased. You'd be basically rather than using 2.2 million of fund balance, you'd be using 550,000. So therefore, your tax levy is going to go up by 1.7 million.
Is that a motion, Mike?
Yes, I moved that.
All right. Is there a second? Leslin seconds that. Discussion on that motion. Dan.
Yeah, I guess I would ask my colleagues to vote against this amendment, vote on the main motion, and then anyone's welcome to make another amendment. But I have been talking about this for a couple of weeks, and if somebody else had a counter proposal, I would have liked to have heard it before right now. So I would request we vote down this amendment, vote on the motion, and then anyone's welcome to make any further amendments they want.
Well, I would respond to that by saying that that's a two-step process when this would be a one-step process, which I think accomplishes the same thing. And I would like to support this amendment. You gave a really good speech, Dan. I was excited about that idea too. But I think it didn't quite capture the truth of how we've gotten to where we are to have the luxury of thinking of these kinds of choices. And in truth, it wasn't that we taxed our residents too much. It was that sales tax for the last 5 years just kept growing and essentially kind of caught up to us. Thank goodness that it did, because then we had the $14 million that we have used and will use already in this budget. So I think that we're now in a situation where we have just so many, when I think about what the state could do to us, it's just mind-boggling. And, Medicaid keeps me up at night even when the other things don't. And that's just one of the things the state could do to us. What if TC3 sees even more of an attack? And those are just, somebody mentioned Code Blue. Like, oh, right, they could do that. There are just so many places where we could see pieces taken out of our revenue side. So I think taking $14 million out of our bank account was the right thing, has been the right thing to do. I think it's an okay thing to do. I think lowering the tax levy is a good thing to do as well. But I think this is a balanced approach, a responsible approach, and I think it's I think people will understand it, and better than when we have to come back to them next year with even a bigger hole to fill. Dan and then Sean, did you have your hand up?
So when you say that we have to come back to them next year with a bigger hole to fill, you're saying as if you know that, but that is an if, okay? So it's not, we do not know what's going to happen next year. People have made that point several times. So we cannot say Dan's proposal will cause taxes to go up 10% next year. Every year we have budgeted very conservatively, and we've brought in tons more money than we were supposed to. We've ended up with more money than we were supposed to. And if we do that same thing again next year, which is what the counterproposal is, let's be conservative again in case something goes wrong next year, then we will be in the same place again next year. We will have overtaxed people. If we go with my proposal and we get to next year and I'm wrong and we've actually gone to a worse place, we can fix it then. We can't fix the overtax next year. There's no way to do it. Once we set the tax rate, we're done.
So how do you pay staff salaries? Several people didn't want to have any layoffs. How do you pay, what are you looking at if we get to, $30 million in the bank and we end up with TC3 costs us $3 million, and then instead of the state cuts are more than 20%?
Yes, those are ifs. In those cases, we do need to raise taxes. There's no, eventually that's what one has to do. But I don't know why we're predicting that now, that we're going to have to raise taxes next year. We don't know. And I would like to err on the side of the taxpayer.
Okay. Anna, then Henry?
I'd like to call the question on this particular amendment.
Is there a second to that?
I'll second it.
All right. So the question is called. That means we need to vote to close debate. So a yes is to end debate on this motion. All right. Kathy, you want to go ahead with the roll?
Donna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
No.
We have 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay. So we're ready to vote on the motion, which is to take, so it's amendment to the original amendment. The amendment is to take $550,000 from the fund balance to apply to capital. Do I have that right?
No.
What is it, Mike?
It's to do the two things that the county administrator recommended that would bring our levy down to the 3.3%.
Increase sales tax by $550,000, use of fund balance by $550,000. So sales tax $555,000, fund balance $550,000.
No, but the sales tax we already did.
No, it's been, my motion is basically a substitute for what's on the table.
He's taking the whole thing off and he's replacing it with Jason's.
Correct.
He's taking the whole thing off.
Okay.
It's a full substitution.
Kathy, I have to ask the boss.
Yes.
Is that kosher?
Yes, that is correct.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. All right. So ready to vote.
Okay. Shauna Black?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
No.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
No.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Seven ayes, seven noes. Motion fails.
We've been here before.
Can I make a motion to call the question for Dan's proposal?
I'm sorry, what, Glenn?
Can I make a motion to call the question of Dan's proposal?
Second.
Let me just, if I might.
Martha, I made a motion. There is a second.
Okay. All right. Everybody understands where we are then. So that, but Dan took as friendly the $555,000 sales tax. Okay, got it.
That's correct. So
2.262712. All right, ready to vote? Wait, we're
calling the question.
Closing debate, or we're voting on Dan's?
We're calling the question.
Calling the question. Voting on calling the question.
All right, voting on calling the question.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Can't hear you, Henry.
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
No.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
All right, ready to vote on Dan's motion. Go ahead, Kathy.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
No.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
No.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
No.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Martha Robertson?
No.
Six ayes, 8 noes. Motion fails.
All right. Let's see. Does anybody want to take a 5-minute break?
Are we done? What do we else have to do?
If anybody wants to...
The resolution.
Don't we?
Yes.
What?
We have to take the resolution that was sent, that I sent...
Yeah.
Before. I sent this afternoon...
Martha.
For the budget,
I have
the tentative budget.
Legal, and so does Dan. So, do you want to take our hands?
I thought Kathy was saying something.
No. No. Okay. There's some hands that are being raised.
All right. Anna and Dan?
I have been in favor of a partial. So I would like to propose a 1.1, which is half of this, 50% of what this is, which is somewhere between 1.1 and 1.2.
All right. That's a movement. Second by Leslyn. All right. That's a motion. Dan, did you want to speak?
Can you just clarify, you're saying take that from the fund balance?
Correct. I'm saying take 50% of this instead of 100% of the 2.2 62712. I'm saying just cut that in 50% is
Thank
what
you.
I would suggest.
Question.
I've got
Jason have a comment.
I just have a question for Kathy. Kathy, since both of them did not pass, there has not been an amendment to the sales tax, correct? We're back to the original series of amendments that came into this.
Thank you, Jason.
The only two additions are the OTR of the 110 for the chief sustainability officer and the additional 5,000 on the levy. Correct, Kathy?
That's correct. Sorry, okay. Then I was not clear. I wanted to make that 1.1 or that 50% on the 2.26. So it is combined with the adjustment in sales tax. So a combination, the adjustment in sales tax and the 50% of the remaining from reserve fund. Which is about 1.1313 something.
Right.
Off the top of my head.
Leslyn, is that second best
time of you? I just want to make sure, Anna, that's the 555,000 sales tax adjustment.
Correct.
Plus 1.1 whatever.
I would just call it 1.1 for argument's sake.
Yep. So it's the combination of the sales tax adjustment and 1.1 from reserve fund, which is essentially half of what we owe.
Can we see the spreadsheet?
That's friendly.
Okay. All right. Mike Lane?
I wanted the clarification. I'd like to see the figures, too.
There's nothing.
Give us 5 minutes, and we can process it. If we can just take a quick break, we'll come back in 5 minutes.
All right, so welcome back to your screen. Can you walk us through? Looks like it's a 2.2% levy increase, 2.21.
Yeah, let's take them in order. Let me set these back to So the first thing we would do is increase the sales tax, which pulls down the levy. So you want to watch these numbers up here and this here.
Okay.
That gets us down to 4.41. And then we have this. And think of these not as target and one time, but as fund balance and levy. Target equals levy. One time equals fund balance. So this one is required to increase the hit on the levy. I'm sorry, hit on the target. So you're watching this number and this number.
You mean the hit on the fund balance?
I'm sorry. I should have slept more last night. So there's the money, the impact on fund balance. That's that part of it. And then here we're going to apply this in the unallocated revenue and reduce the levy. So you're watching back up here. And it pulls that down to 2.21.
Okay.
It's necessarily that fund balance use is necessarily a two-parter, which just complicates things.
Okay.
Jason, or Kevin, just one clarification. Could you tell us, with the combined amount that we're pulling from this year and what we're projecting to be pulled from next year, what is the total reduction in fund balance that we can expect if nothing else changes? Assuming nothing else changes.
Well, it would be $1.7 million less than the original proposal, because the original proposal was 2.8, this is 1.1, so it's 1.7 less. It'll add 1.7 million, so you might be up around 34 million, assuming all goes as it's outlined here.
And 34 million is slightly over 18%, correct?
Yes.
I just wanted to make that point because you have said, you know, try to stick at 18%. This does hold us just floating above 18%, which we need to keep in mind for next year, but at least it does a little bit of everything.
Is that Henry?
Yes. Dan said something during his comments about that this is the one chance we have of relieving tax from people. I mean, that's not really true, is it, Jason? That if we go with a 3% or 4% levy this year, things turn out wonderful next year, then we could also just remove the levy next year, right?
You can decrease the levy, yes.
Yes, we can decrease the level to zero, right?
You can decrease it from what it was. So, you know, if you adopt a levy this year at this number, which is 52.3 million, and things improve significantly in other areas like sales tax, and you don't need to increase the levy, you could decrease the levy technically, yes.
And we could decrease the rate, which further that would get us below zero in a sense. So people's taxes would be lower than they are.
That's all that happened. I mean, that's essentially what you're saying, Henry, is in a static world. Right. You know, if things improved significantly next year, that, you know, you may not need to increase the levy at all. You could decrease the tax levy. So in that case, you would have a lower tax rate. Yes. And assuming your assessed value doesn't change, you would be paying less taxes than you are now.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question.
All right. Hold on. Do we need the screen anymore? Are we all set?
I have a question about the screen.
Okay. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you. I'm just trying to get clarity. So the number from fund balance is 1.362. What is the levy increase? Which number is the levy increase?
It's in the yellow box.
Dollar figure, not a percent.
1.131356. Kevin's got it highlighted up there.
Thank you.
So rather than a $2.8 million levy increase, this is a $1.1 million levy increase.
Thank you.
Is there any other discussion or questions? Okay, Kevin, if you want to, do you dare take the screen down? Thank you. Thanks for the work. All right, if there's no other discussion, I'm ready to vote. All right, go ahead, Kathy.
Shauna Black.
Shauna, you're muted.
Sorry. Kind of glad you had me muted there for a second. Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mori?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, that's what Congress should be doing, right, folks? Meeting in the middle.
Dan has his hand up, Martha.
Dan.
Thank you. Okay, I've got one more. It got mentioned a little bit, but I'm just going to highlight it. In this year's budget, there is a proposed increase of about $1 million to the contingency fund. And that amount is in target. It's not fund balance. So all the fund balance discussion before or objections you had before, you can let those go. You can come up with some new objections. So I'm going to move that we move an amendment that we take out $1 million from the fund, from the contingency fund, and because that doesn't quite leave us with zero, I'm going to continue that we would take the remainder, which is about $100,000, and take that from fund balance to come out to a balanced 0% increase tax levy.
Is there a second for that? Shauna seconds. Discussion.
I will just say this. I can see that it's not going to pass, so I'm just going to say this anyway. What this would do, I understand why the extra money is put in contingency. It was a sound decision. I don't question that decision. What this would do is, if that need arises for that contingency money, then we would take it from fund balance, which is what we would do anyway. And if the need does not arise, then we've just saved the taxpayers' money. So that's the thinking behind it.
All right, Shauna and then Anna.
I just wanted to ask Jason, what does the $1 million do in contingent? Can you talk a little bit to that?
It provides you with the ability to absorb increases in expenses or shortfalls in revenue that are not, that essentially it provides you more flexibility to absorb that. So in this case, the expectation that there will be additional cuts in state aid, there is additional, or revenues, have some type of shortfall. So for example, if casino revenue were to be taken away from us, this allows you capacity to absorb that.
So essentially we wouldn't be going back to you. You would have like a cushion of $1 million before we came back to you.
Yeah, it provides two purposes. One is it allows it to absorb more unknowns, more uncertainties in the current fiscal year. It also, in preparation of 2022, has increased the levy, some additional funds to be able to absorb those unfunded mandates that may prolong beyond 1 year. So if you all of a sudden you have a permanent cut in state aid, you're going to have to readjust that both in the current budget, meaning you have to be prepared for it, and then you're also going to have to be prepared for increasing expenditures or decreasing revenue in the 22 budget. And this contingency provides additional flexibility and capacity so that, again, it's not as much of an impact in 22.
But just to clarify, any expenditure out of contingency does have to come back to us.
Yes.
It's not that he can just go ahead and cover anything. It has to come back through committee and from the legislature.
Any spending out of contingency fund has to have legislative approval.
Okay. All right. Anna, then Henry.
I would just say, I mean, I super appreciate the intention of minimizing impact this year, but I do think that we just came up with like a pretty stellar, quite complicated, multi-pronged solution of addressing a lot of different needs. And at the end of the day, one of the needs that it met was maintaining end of next year a potential 18% of our levy. And I think that that should also be in our goal, because anything below that, we have been told that that would start to change our bond rating. So
this doesn't affect that 18%. It doesn't change that.
Hold on. At the end, what we are looking at, it could. If this 100%, what you just said, if this $1 million is needed, at that time, we would then take it out of fund balance. And that would actually put us then at below the $34 million that the current budget, if stayed on track, would leave us to. So it at least gives us that option, and I feel safer with it. There's a lot of ifs, Dan. We can go back and forth about a million of those. I do get that. I think that we're good. I'd like to see us just move on, but I appreciate everybody's work on it.
Henry.
Yes. Jason, if TC3 needs more money during the time, where would it come from?
It could come from contingency. It could come from appropriate, you know, unassigned fund balance. It depends on how much they need. It depends on what, you know, depends on what they need and what you end up doing. If you're going to end up loaning them money or something on those lines, it may have to come out of fund balance directly versus contingency. Contingency just might not be big enough.
But contingency would be used first?
It could, yes.
Okay.
All right, I just want to clarify. I'm looking at page section 2, page 29. The status of general fund balance. And it looks like after everything that's been done, it's the fund balance before we've made any of these changes is 34,212,000. So this would, if the motion here is to remove, Dan, describe again, to take out the $1 million from contingency.
That's right. That doesn't affect fund balance.
Until we need it. Okay. All right. Any other discussion on this? Well, I would just point folks to one of the reasons that we were able to get to where we are in the budget is that Jason proposed cutting the health home program in mental health. And we felt okay about cutting that because the state would take it over sort of by statute or whatever. It was their responsibility. I'm going to point you to the memo Jason wrote on October 16th. He called Budget Discussions, and he outlines the Community Optional Preventive Services Program, which is in DSS, and which Kit had mentioned in her presentation. And that seems to be a package of programs that are what they just said, optional preventive services that we have chosen, not mandates that we had to do, but if we did them, the state would support with partial reimbursement. And these are the kind of preventive programs that we understand save us money in the long run. And we have been, you know, save us in foster care expenses and separating kids from their families, a lot of institutionalization, things that are much more expensive, not to mention much worse outcomes for our residents. So the risk here is the 2021 proposed budget includes almost $540,000 for COPS programming. And if I understand correctly, Jason, you're concerned that the state might pull any kind of funding from that and we would be left with having to decide whether to do that at all or pay for it all ourselves. Is that right?
That's an yes. That's a possibility. You know, that's there. Yes.
So that's the kind of thing we might be facing, where we could cut health homes this year, feeling all right, some, because the state was going to take it over. That wouldn't happen if we had this kind of a structural change from New York State. So I think the $1 million in contingency is a really good security blanket, and I would oppose taking that.
Vote.
Mike Lane?
Let's vote.
Okay. I was just going to say, no other discussion. Kathy, go ahead.
Shauna Black?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
No.
That's a no?
No.
Anna Callis?
No.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
No.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
No.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Martha Robertson?
No.
One eye, 13 no's.
All right, thank you. Are there any other motions to amend the proposed budget? All right, then can I get a motion for adoption of these amendments? The motion that Kathy had sent us earlier and that I sent out this afternoon reads, adoption of amendments to the 2021 tentative Tompkins County budget and 2021 to 2025 capital program, that's ID 9676. Anna, you raise your hand to move it?
Correct.
And Deborah seconds? Deborah seconds. Right. Now, there are a lot of blanks in this draft you have. Jason or Kevin, can you help us fill in the numbers?
Are you able to see the screen?
I can't see any of it. So the first, the total tax levy amount is
$52,399,459.
Okay.
These entries on this sheet are numbered in the order of the blanks in the amendment, in the resolution.
Resulting, so this is a total tax levy amount of $52,399,459, resulting in an approximate increase of 2.21% and a countywide average tax rate of 6.21, is that right? 6.21 per thousand. Decrease of one point, I feel like I'm in the eye doctor's office.
1.61% in the rate. And the increase on the median priced home of $200,000 for 2020 over 2019 is $42.77.
So the increase is due entirely to the increased value of the home and not?
Yes. So this is now, this proposed rate would allow you to say this is the seventh consecutive year your rate increase, your tax rate has decreased.
So if your assessment didn't change, your taxes are going down.
Your assessment stayed the same. You are paying less taxes.
Amazing. Great. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or discussion? Let us vote.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
It's 13 ayes, 1 no.
All right. I guess we call that a wrap. We'll take that to the legislature at 5:30 on Thursday night. If anybody in the public is listening or tuning in, or we'll watch, we'll read Dominic's press release. Maybe we'll have some public comment on this. Am I right, Kathy or Leslin? Would this be the only order of business for Thursday night?
Yes, it is.
That's what Kathy said. You never know with this legislature.
All right.
Martha?
Could be an all-nighter.
Sure, we'll have a lot of nice things to say on Thursday night, but I wanted to say you've done a nice job leading the EBC meetings, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that.
I'll second that.
Unanimous second. There you go.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate that. I really appreciate everybody being so engaged, managing to do this on Zoom. That's one for the books. And Kevin and Jason and department heads, Kathy, IT department, I guess Jim Blizzard is there somewhere, right? We are deeply grateful to all of you. Jason, please make sure our department heads understand how grateful we are for their work in twisting and shoving and making things work this year and for next year. And we never would have thought we'd be in this decent a place, even with these big question marks. But it's thanks to your work, thanks to your leadership, and Kevin and everybody else on the team. So we deeply appreciate it. So, all right, anything else? Motion to adjourn. Moved by Jason. Wait, Jason? We're not gonna sing happy birthday. Did Mike already leave? All right.
He's probably eating his dinner. Good. Jason, that's next year you're gonna run against me as legislator.
All right. Moved by Rich, seconded by Annie. Adjournment.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.